Hi, this is Michael Sadler of Saga, and you're listening to the Blog of Rock.
Hallo, willkommen bei The Block of Rock, deinem Hardrock und Heavy Metal Podcast Musikmagazin. Ich bin Uwe Lerch und ich nehme dich Backstage mit zu den Rockstars. Natürlich quatschen wir über die Musik, die uns alle verbindet, über neue Platten, über Livepläne und was früher so war. Aber wir sprechen auch über die Menschen dahinter. Was hat sie inspiriert und motiviert und welche Rockstar-Tipps haben sie für dich da draußen? In den Shownotes, das ist die Beschreibung zu dieser Episode, über die du das hier gerade hörst, findest du einen zentralen Link für alle weiteren Informationen, der dich aber auch in meine offizielle Facebook-Gruppe führt. Ich würde mich freuen, wenn wir uns hier kennenlernen. Bist du nun am Start? Na dann komm doch mit! Heute gibt es eine Sonderausgabe quasi als The Blog of Prog, denn diesmal dreht sich alles um Saga. Fast auf den Tag genau, vor 40 Jahren, habe ich als damals 16-Jähriger in der kleinen Dortmunder Westfalenhalle 3 die Band auf ihrer Silent Night Tour live erleben dürfen. Kanadas Rock Sensation stand auf dem Ticket einer Band, die damals noch eher als Geheimtipp galt. Ein halbes Jahr später erlebte ich sie dann nur wenige Meter weiter in der großen Halle bei Rock Pop in Concert, wo sie das Indoor Festival eröffneten, auf dem auch legendäre Bands wie Spliff Radio Show, Foreigner und Meatloaf spielten. Diese Rocknacht, die später als Aufzeichnung im ZDF gezeigt wurde, bedeutete dann auch den Durchbruch der Band in Deutschland. Germany loves Saga and Saga loves Germany, könnte man seitdem sagen, denn der harte Kern der hiesigen Fans ist mit den fünf Jungs aus dem Land der Ahornblätter über die Jahre durch dick und dünn gegangen. Jetzt erscheint ihr neues Studioalbum Symmetry, auf dem Saga einige große Hits, aber auch Deep Cuts auf eine neue Weise akustisch völlig neu interpretiert haben. Unter Zuhilfenahme von Mandoline, Banjo, Fiddle und Cello. Für mich der Anlass, endlich ein Interview nachzuholen, was eigentlich schon vor einem Jahr geplant war. Mit Michael Sadler, Frontmann von Saga. Mit einem fröhlichen
Guten Morgen, Deutschland. How are you?
Begrüßte mich ein gut aufgelegter Michael vor seinem Greenscreen an seinem Rechner. Die letzten Tage waren jedoch etwas anstrengend für ihn und seine Familie, da Michaels Frau erkrankt war und unser Interview sogar mehrmals verschoben werden musste. Daher gleich die Frage zum Einstieg. Wie geht's der Gattin?
She's much better, thank you. She's just a little bit of congestion, but the scary part, I think, is pretty much over.
Oh Mann, nach einem einfachen Schnupfen klang das ja nicht. Natürlich auch gleich die Frage, die heutzutage als erstes im Kopf rumschwirrt. War es eine Covid-Erkrankung?
It might have been a strain or a form of it, because a lot of the symptoms were very, very similar. She had been tested 2 days after she fell quite ill, and it came out negative, but this was one of those drive-through ones, so it's not completely extensive, but it said there wasn't enough to, it was a negative result, but she certainly had the symptoms of it. We went to see the doctor, she got some antibiotics, and even the nurse said it sounded like she may have had it. So, I mean, it affects different people in different ways, so.
Der gebürtige Waliser lebt schon länger nicht mehr in Kanada, sondern im mittleren Westen der USA, wo er sich eher anonym vom Tourstress der jährlichen Europareisen erholt. Und genau da wollten wir uns ja vor einem Jahr zu einem Gespräch treffen, am 9. März 2020, Neu-Isenburg, Hugenottenhalle. Ich sollte mich am späten Nachmittag nach dem Soundcheck bereithalten, bekam aber vor Ort die Information vom Tourmanager, dass Michael leider nicht zur Verfügung stünde, da er die Stimme schonen sollte. Zu diesem Zeitpunkt war das Virusthema bereits Headline und ich zeigte Verständnis, da gerade Sänger auf einer laufenden Tour immer besonders empfindlich sind. Und so sah ich Michael am Backstage-Eingang auch mit einem Schal an mir vorbeihuschen. Als Alternative stand jedoch Keyboarder Jim Gilmore zur Verfügung, der mir von den ersten Konzertabsagen während der Tour, von ausgefallenen Meet-and-Greets zur Vermeidung von Kontakten und von Desinfektionsmitteln im Tourbus und in der Garderobe berichtete. Ich schaute auch nicht schlecht, als er mein überreichtes Mikrofon gar nicht anfassen wollte und bat mich, es vor ihm auf den Tisch zu platzieren. Das anschließende Konzert in der ausverkauften Halle war aber sensationell. Die Band war in Höchstform. Man merkte jedoch, dass ein Teil der Fans, von denen einige sicherlich auch Ü50 waren, sich eher mit etwas Abstand im hinteren Bereich in der Halle aufhielten, um so Direktkontakte zu vermeiden. Und ein paar Tage später ging der ganze Corona-Mist ja auch in Deutschland richtig los. Wie erinnert sich Michael Sadler heute daran und wie ist ihm die Flucht aus Europa gelungen?
I think there were 4 shows left. We were literally on the way to Zoetermeer in Netherlands. And we were to play, I guess, the next night or whatever. But anyway, we found out on the bus on the way to the city that the show was canceled. And in fact, the last 4 had been canceled. Or, let's say postponed or moved. And I found out that the U.S. was about to close the border for international flights coming in on the eve of the 14th or something like that. I just managed to fly out in time or I wouldn't have been able to fly back to the States. A lot of people were stranded in Europe when that happened, but I managed to just get it. Mind you, I had to spend 6 hours at the immigration at the Chicago airport, which was an adventure in itself, but that's pretty much it. I mean, I was lucky to get out when I did. I don't think Canada had the impending shutdown at the same time as the U.S. because the guys got in, it was no problem, but I just squeaked in there. So, but it was a very melancholy feeling because we didn't want to leave, obviously. We wanted to keep playing. The shows were going so well, the energy on stage, the energy from the audience. And as you say, it feels like a real groundswell upswing again for the band, which was great. And it was like, no, it's going to be okay. It's just a little, it's a little flu, you know, come on.
Bei diesem Gespräch mit Jim Gilmer, den alle ja nur Daryl nennen, machte er auch erste Andeutung über ein neues Spezialalbum, über das er zu diesem Zeitpunkt aber noch nicht im Detail sprechen wollte. Also war dieses Akustikalbum schon länger in den Köpfen der Band?
Surprise! But it was. You'll probably ask the question anyway, but it was born of when we were essentially supporting ourselves in the 2017 tour and calling ourselves Pockets. The original name of the band, and we would come out. The backdrop was very similar to the Symmetry cover, as if we were playing in an old, overgrown library and just doing acoustic, very much what you hear on Symmetry, not quite as advanced or as developed as the CD, but that's where the germ of the idea happened. And the timing worked out where it was absolutely, I don't want to say a blessing in disguise, but the fact that we had to go into lockdown was the perfect opportunity to work on an album like this. Because as opposed to working on a new full-on studio album, you really need the band together during the writing stage, during the rehearsal stage, getting the songs, you know, really, really primed. So lockdown would not be, we could still do it and do it remotely, and bands have, and you know, put out some very good product. And there's going to be a lot of great albums coming next year for sure, or this year. But that wouldn't really work for us. You could do it, but it wouldn't be the same. But with Symmetry, not only is it broken down, so it's a lot easier to deal with sonically, but these are songs we've been playing for a very, very, very long time. And so the parts are the parts. We know what our parts are individually. Once we had grasped the idea of what the album was going to sound like and feel like, it was really investigating our own personal parts. So it wasn't a matter of working out something new with the band and working out, you know, getting the song right. It was up to the individual to revisit what he had done originally. So as a vocalist, I would take a song like Wind Him Up, for example. I couldn't sing it the same way I did on the album, not with that kind of dynamic. It wouldn't suit the instrumentation. So it really was a matter of going, okay, you know, catching the vibe and going, well, I can't sing it up there unless I sing it in falsetto. That's not appropriate. I can drop it an octave lower, but that's too low and it's ineffectual. So I essentially had to come up with a middle new melody with the same phrasing and still imply the song. You don't want to lose the core of the song, obviously. You can't stray too far, but you've got to readjust your thinking. And Ian had to play all of his electric parts on acoustic. He called it construction work. I mean, it was really, he had, you know, I think of all of us, he probably had the hardest job adjusting, followed by myself. But we all had to, you know, but as I say, the lockdown afforded us that chance to isolate and really just, you know, what can I do to my vocal, you know, to make it appropriate, give it a new feel and keep the integrity of the song. And you know, that's what ended up happening. So it was perfect for that.
Wann und wie haben Sie das Album denn aufgenommen und waren Sie nicht selbst überrascht, wie manche Stücke klingen, wenn man den Stecker zieht?
Everybody did it at home. They did their own parts at home. And then we just kind of flew them in to Jim, and Jim Crichton sat there. He called himself the custodian of the album because he was gathering all the parts and putting the whole thing together. But It was nice doing it that way because it was like each time I would receive a track, because I was the last to put the vocal on once all the, you know, the music was there. I was sending out, you know, to the guys an idea of, you know, how I was approaching the song to let them hear it. But I was fortunate enough to hear the parts as they were developing. And it was a real treat to hear what, you know, for example, Ian had done and Daryl playing accordion and stuff like that. So it was great fun. We did everything pretty much at home. And like I said, we had the chance to be alone and just really, you know, think about what you were doing individually. So.
Auch wenn ich manche Songs sicher mehrere hundert Mal gehört habe, ist es sehr spannend, diese Version ohne massive Keyboards und ohne laute Gitarren mit den Originalen zu vergleichen. Wie war es denn für die Band selbst? Haben Sie sich auch ein Stückchen selbst neu entdeckt?
Yeah, because I don't say you get lazy with it, or you just it just becomes routine because you know that song. Yeah, I know how that song goes because you just play it. But you just get so used to it; it's very familiar. But when you have to do this, like you say, you have to put it under the microscope, and you really start saying, "Wow, I understand in certain moments why people consider it fairly complex because it is." And I think we just take it for granted because we do that naturally. And we're so used to it. But yeah, we take the older songs like A Tired World or Pitch Men. And when you start breaking it down into its minute details, it's like, wow, this is pretty cool. So I was like, well, I wish I'd written this. Oh, wait a minute, I did. So yeah, it was rediscovering some of the more intricate things that we do that we, you know, like I said, we take for granted in the meantime. So.
Wie war denn der Selektionsprozess der Stücke? Was waren die großen Herausforderungen?
It was just, you know, finding appropriate music that would blend together well. Thinking of, you know, what the 3/4s, because we do 3/4s quite often. So it was a matter of picking the right one. And it really was like, after so many albums and so many songs to choose from, that's the hard part. As opposed to not having enough songs going, what are we going to do? The hard part was deciding which ones we're not going to record. But the idea was always to make sure that they were songs that were as much as possible unexpected, like Pitch Man. How can you know, we're going to do acoustic version of Pitch Man. You can't do that. Well, okay, we're going to do that one for sure.
Auf diesem Album gibt es zwei Medleys mit jeweils 3 Songs. Was ist denn die Geschichte dahinter, wollte ich wissen.
It was a natural thing. Once we had decided on the 3 songs that were going to go together, it really came down to arrangement more than anything else. And that was Jim Crichton. I'm pretty sure he put together the actual arrangements of the medleys. Wasn't too difficult once we had decided which keys fit together nicely and which feel and the segues between them. It was a pretty natural process, really.
Also Jim Crichton, der sich ja 2018 vom Live-Business der Band zurückzog, ist also immer noch mit dabei.
Very much so, creatively and recording-wise, of course. Yeah, the only part he retired from was the touring, which I respect. You know, it comes to a point in everybody's life, it's like, you know what, I've had enough of the road, but very much involved creatively still, so... very much a part of this album. Couldn't have done it without him, basically.
War es nicht schwierig, aus über 40 Jahren Bandgeschichte sich 3 Handvoll Stücke zu picken? Vor allem, wenn der Plan aufgeht, könnte man ja gleich an die Karriere der Band nochmal neu starten und weitere Klassiker nochmal in diesem Stil nachlegen.
How did we choose? It was almost like, you know, taking a dartboard and, you know, closing your eyes and going, throwing a dart and go, look at that song, that song. We tried to make it, you know, as unpredictable as possible. Always there was a natural choice. It just wanted to be that kind of treatment. Images, chapter one, you take a ballad and you can't really go wrong. But again, even with Images, I had to revisit it too, because the style of vocal that the way I sang it originally, was not appropriate. So I had to rework that one too. But it really was just a matter of throwing out ideas. And I mean, half of them or a third of them, we were playing live already. We had already visited those songs already in the pocket set in 2017. So that was a no-brainer. That was easy to choose those ones. The others were just throwing out suggestions and we'd email back and forth or get on the phone back and forth. Oh, how about doing this one? How about doing that one? And it just came down to very democratically all deciding that we all agreed to do that one and that one, that one. Like we've always been very democratic about it.
An dieser Stelle sollte ich mich auch mal bei Michael bedanken, da einer meiner all-time-Faves mit auf dem Album ist. Perfectionist, die Walzerballade vom ersten Saga-Album. Ein Song, der für mich alten Perfektionisten manchmal Fluch und Segen zugleich ist.
When you're doing a 3-4 medley, you have to include that's our ultimate waltz. So, I mean, it's a funny thing about that song is, I mean, at the beginning of our careers, I wouldn't have thought that an out-and-out waltz, which it basically is, it's a 3-4 waltz, would you know, fit appropriately in a rock band setting, but much less actually be as popular as it ended up being and striking a chord with everybody, with the audience, especially in a place like Puerto Rico. When we found out that The Perfectionist is a massive song in Puerto Rico, I'm going, I don't get it. I couldn't figure out the what's the appeal of a waltz in a Latino kind of music community. I don't get it, you know, but it was massive on the island. But yeah, I mean, you can't do a 3-4 medley without the flagship 3-4. So.
Haben Sie in der Zwischenzeit dann auch die Zeit genutzt, um auch Material für ein komplett neues Album zu schreiben?
Yes. there was always the plan to. It wasn't a matter of, you know, let's put out the Symmetry and you know, maybe we'll put out another. No, there's definite plans for another studio album. I assure everybody, because there's still a lot of creative ideas, and the well is not dry by any stretch of the imagination. We have a lot more to give. So.
Saga auf Platte war und ist die eine Seite. Saga live eine ganz andere Energie. Wie ist es für den Musiker aktuell? Vermisst er die Momente, wo er sich auf der Bühne den Bass umschnallt und Humble Stance spielt?
I miss being on stage, period. Putting on the bass, sitting at the piano, whatever. I just miss, yeah, we're dying to play again. The touring is a necessary evil. You know, we can do without that part of it, but unfortunately that comes with it so that we can be where we need to be. But we miss being on stage so much. It's,
Saga gehörten in der ersten Hälfte der 80er zu den Rock-Acts in Deutschland. Ich habe sie über die Jahre bestimmt 20 Mal gesehen. Nach Rockpop noch 1983 als Headliner in der ausverkauften Westfalenhalle auf der Heads of Tales Tour mit dem Opener Chris Rea. Aber sie sind auch nicht minder gut in kleinen Venues wie den aus dem Nähten platzenden Kolossal in Aschaffenburg mit knapp 500 Leuten. Dazu Open Airs auf der Lorelei oder man glaubt es kaum, beim ersten Rock am Ring 1985.
Yeah, that's of all the memories, that one will stay with me till the day I die. It's just, I mean, it was just awe-inspiring. I remember walking up on that stage and looking out there and just going, oh my gosh. And not just the number of people, there were Canadian flags and people dancing and clapping. I was like, wow. But I think you're right. I think we can appeal to whatever size audience, whatever setting. And I think that comes from certainly my concern for contact with the audience and making them feel part of the show. It doesn't matter if it's 500 or 5,000 or 50,000. You have to find a way to get that connection. And if you get that, it doesn't matter about the venue. If the audience feels like you connected with them, it's the same. But I there's something about like places like Aschaffenburg and the Colossal. There's a special vibe in that room. I mean, it's ridiculously packed, and everybody knows that. The stage is kind of small, but it doesn't matter because the vibe. It's all about the vibe. And it's all about that moment, and everyone's sharing that moment together. It's, you know, my idea of a great concert has always been if everybody leaves the building, vendors, promoters, audience, band, crew, everybody leaves with a smile on their face and they had a good time that day, that night. That's a successful, you know, concert. So.
Für den Sommer sind weitere Open-Air-Shows in Deutschland geplant. Da heißt es Daumen drücken, oder?
I'm cautiously optimistic at this point because things change every day. It's been crazy. There's so much different kinds of information coming from different sources and what's the truth, what's this, what's that. We play it day by day. Right now, I mean, I touched base with the promoters yesterday over there, and it looks the I think the June show or a couple of shows in June that may or may not happen. July looks good. The rest of the summer stuff looks good at this point. Everything can change. We've got our fingers crossed that things will lighten up in the next month or two, and everything will go ahead as planned. Having said that, you know, we have shows lined up right now in the fall in Scandinavia, which we may add to if that's going to happen, which it looks like it will right now. But as far as the summer shows, we have our fingers crossed. It looks fairly certain. But I wouldn't, I certainly, if I was a betting man, which I sometimes am, I wouldn't put money on it right now. I wouldn't on any plans, not just concert touring. I mean, it's so people can't make definite plans to go, you know, there's travel restrictions. You don't know what they are, to which country, for what, for holidays, for whatever. So, you know, it's all up in the air. Fingers crossed.
Bis dahin ist ja noch etwas Zeit, das neue Album Symmetry zu genießen. Ich wünsche euch auf jeden Fall viel Spaß dabei und erteile dem Sänger das Schlusswort.
Thank you. It's been very, very well received. At the beginning, there were a few that I think they had this preconceived notion because they heard Saga in acoustic and it's like, oh, just what we need, an unplugged album. Oh, great, you know. But once they understood what kind of album it is, it's not just a matter of us taking the songs the way they exist and playing them on acoustic instruments. It was a reworking of them and reimagining it and almost rewriting in some places. There are new parts here and there. So once I think the initial impression of what it was, what they were going to hear, was made clear, then people started really warming up to it, and the response has been tremendously positive, and it's great. I mean, this was a labor of love, and we really, really enjoyed making it. One of our more challenging albums, for completely different reasons than normal, but that's always satisfying when you take on a challenge like that and you pull it off, and you always cross your fingers, hope the audience is going to like it, but we've been very, very, very happy with the response so far.
Alles klar, dann sage ich mal danke für den netten Plausch.
Thank you, Uwe. Thank you. Stay safe, yeah? Bye-bye.
Wenn dir diese Episode gefallen hat, folge mir doch gerne beim Podcast-Dealer deines Vertrauens, damit du auch die nächste Folge nicht verpasst. Du bekommst die ganze Staffel als kostenloses Abo unter anderem bei Spotify, Apple Podcast, Amazon Music, Deezer, Soundcloud, YouTube, dem Podcast-Portal von Google oder natürlich über meine Homepage theblogofrock.com. Höre dir dort auch die bereits veröffentlichten Stories an, denn jede Woche gibt es hier neues Futter. Und vor allem, erzähle es deinen Freunden und teile die frohe Kunde auf Social Media. Alles klar? Dann hören wir uns ja wieder beim nächsten Mal. Bis dahin, keep on rockin'!